Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. I used to say that I'm as psychic as a post. Everything I know about the afterlife and the greater reality has come not from my own guides or my own communications, but it's come from almost a half century of patient investigation of nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent evidence. I'm just a lawyer, and I just have a very peculiar hobby. That's what I've always said. There is nothing supernatural about me at all. Well, I've recently learned better. In the last 2 years, I've been made to understand that while I'm not conventionally psychic, I'm actually a channel. On their own initiative and their own schedule, I can channel books from spirit like nobody's business. Who knew? I have had to swallow quite a lot of humble pie in the past 2 years. Not only am I able to channel those that we used to think were dead, but it turns out that nearly everything I've ever written has been channeled. I have no writing talent at all, even my fiction, go figure. But I've adjusted now, and I have a whole new respect for those who are genuinely psychic, the real spiritual mediums, the ones like Suzanne Wilson who truly are able to connect us with people we used to think were dead. Suzanne has lately begun to, since I started talking about her, Suzanne has become so overwhelmed that she's no longer taking even reservations from people who would like readings with her. So she's turned her talent to something which I think is even more important. She's working to develop, to first carefully find and choose and develop young psychic mediums who will be able to be the greatest mediums of the next generation. She tells me that our guest today is one who has an extraordinary gift. And today, Camber Wilson is going to talk about how she's learning to do what she does and how it feels to be able to speak this way with people that we used to think were dead. Welcome, Camber. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I know a little about Camber's story, but you're going to find this fascinating. Camber, tell us a little bit about your history. I mean, even from childhood, you had something of the gift. And just tell us a little of that, please.
Yes, my family, we lost my oldest brother when I was very, very young. So I don't know if I was born with this gift or if it was just the timing that he was lost and I was really a toddler or a baby. I was 1.5 at the time. And so growing up, I don't ever remember not being able to do this. I thought it was very normal. And I have always been able to feel things, feel people, feel spirit, feel things that weren't there that other people couldn't see. So I've had this for a very, very long time. And it's something that you kind of get used to after a while, but as for, would you like me to share more of my history with it, Roberta?
Well, the things that interested me most, frankly, and I have, as I say, I've read your notes, the things that interested me most were things that I think people would be curious about. You're a young child. You're able to feel things. First, you were getting messages from your brother, right? You were...
Yes.
And you sort of felt close to him as a child growing up, even though you had no conscious real memory of him, right? You were a baby when he died.
We had home videos and things like that, so I don't have all of my memories are kind of reminder memories of pictures and home videos and stuff like that. And I never really felt super like anybody got me growing up. When you're intuitive like this, there's this feeling of separation from people that aren't when you're trying to figure it out as a little person. And I would watch videos of him and I just knew that there was something there that I couldn't explain in my little consciousness. And that me and him were, I call him my twin flame now, but we were connected in a way that was so much different than I understood at the time. But
and,
it was
and people,
that,
people other people didn't know, though, that you had this gift until you told them, and then that wasn't a good thing?
Well, so my parents were grieving, and they handled things like grieving people did, and in the best way that they could. And being, you know, 3, 4, 5, trying to understand grieving and everything going on around me, I would try to tell them. I would see my parents be very sad, and I would say, you know, he's still here. He's right over there. Or I remember telling my mom one time, I feel him so strongly, it makes me want to cry, because I didn't know how else to explain that energy and that emotion that came up. And,
yes.
And they, you know, I don't think that they understood really what I was trying to say in the way that I was saying it. And they were grieving, and so it was hard to talk about him. So I learned very quickly that, oh, not everybody can do this, and I shouldn't talk about this. And so I spent a lot of time alone in my room, and I practiced, you know, being with him, the one person that I felt like understood me in the world. I spent a lot of time with him, and it's like this automatic understanding that goes back and forth. Like, talking out loud makes it stronger, but you don't have to. And I would just sit there and have these conversations with him in my head. And I always kept that open, but I learned that other people, not everybody understood, and it was something we definitely didn't talk about. So I kept it very secret for a very, very long time.
And you say, too, that there was some sort of negative feeling in your family. There were addictions or other family issues, so that would have, you wanted to be isolated from that as well, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of turmoil going on. We have, well, our ancestry, there's a lot of addiction and kind of mental problems that are in my family history. And so when my parents lost my brother, especially my dad owned a lot of what happened, being the protector and the provider, and he wasn't there to protect him. He took it extremely, extremely hard. And so there was a lot of alcoholism and turmoil and things like that going on. And being an empath, it served me that I could sense him and I could feel him and I could feel when things were safe. But at the same time, it comes with its great rewards and its great burdens. And so there was a lot of turmoil and a lot of fighting. And because of that, we had a kind of a negative entity in our house. And that's another reason why I kept this super secret. And I actually never wanted this gift because of that.
Right.
I kept this open with my brother, but there was a negative energy in our home. And during the day, it was fine. But at night, he would come and heckle me. And I became very, very afraid of what it was that I could do. And I wanted nothing to do with it because I was so aware of this other side of being this way.
I'd like to use that. That's an amazing story. And I'd like to just tell everyone, this is not uncommon. If you have a lot of turmoil and negativity in your house, you literally become a beacon for low energy negative beings. And they will latch onto people that, especially people who can perceive them, as Camber was able to do, and frighten them in order to milk them for negative energy. This is a horrible
thing.
The worst of them are called shadow men. I don't know if what you had was quite a shadow man, but these are like the lowest of the low. And because they're very, very low energy, because they're very low on love, they're very low energy. And because they're low energy, they really can't hurt you, but they can make you crazy. So I'm so sorry you went through that
right.
as a child.
No, it taught me a lot of things about myself. And there's definitely a side of this that you want to be able to control it. And as, you know, 2 years ago, as I found this calling, it's been nice that I've had this ability to close it out more so when I need to, and then open it up when I can. So I'm not, like you said, a walking beacon for everybody. I still do have spirit approach me in certain times of the day that I'm like, oh, hi, but I don't walk around wide open. And so that really taught me more so how to control my gift, and it serves a purpose and a strength in me that I'm really grateful for now.
I'm here with Camber Wilson, who, by the way, is not related to Suzanne Wilson, who is now her mentor. But Camber had a very difficult childhood. She obviously always had the gift. Do you know if you had any ancestors with the gift?
You know, I don't. There's some talk about, you know, people being able to hear voices in my past, but I don't know. We don't really talk about it. It's not something that was open in our family to talk about.
One of the things we know is that often this is something which is hereditary. So if you had kind of weird people in your past, they may well have been empaths, it was not something you ever talked about. So that's something which people who are listening who might wonder if they have the gift, see if there's anyone in your family who was a little off, maybe heard people talking or whatever, because even a generation or two ago, people didn't say that they were able to perceive spirits. And fortunately, we're past that now. All right. So Camber, for a little while, you sort of tried to pretend this wasn't going on, right? You got out of the house, which was a very unpleasant place to be, and went on. And then you met the love of your life, you say, your soulmate. And you got married, and everything was good. And tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, gosh, that's a fun story. We actually met our freshman year in high school. And I never intended on getting married young. My mom got married at 17, and in my head, I thought, okay, I'm going to go get my education. I'm going to travel. I'm going to get a degree. And I met Luke, my husband, when we were in ninth grade, and I immediately knew there was something different about him. But, you know, you're in high school. You're playing around. You're experimenting and finding yourself. And so our freshman year and our sophomore year, we dated on and off, but there was nothing very serious about us. And then the end of our junior year, we've been together ever since. We got this connection, and it was amazing, the connection that we felt, and it's hard to explain. And later he told me that he had his own, the second he saw me, he had his own revelation about me. And so we've been together since 16, and got married at 18, and it kind of progressed from there. We had kids young, we started our life young, we grew up young. That's not to say that it hasn't had its trials, so.
Yes. Well, one of the things people need to understand is that we plan our lives with the people who are going to be important in those lives. And one of the things we plan, of course, very carefully is our marriages. And it isn't always easy for us to connect. You had a very easy time of it. But when you look at somebody and you just know, that's what's happening. You're recognizing this is something that is supposed to happen. Are you supposed to be together for life? Who knows? Maybe not. But we definitely do plan these connections. But you, because you were married so young, you had some difficulties, right?
We did. We both came out of kind of broken homes. My husband's parents are divorced, and there was a good amount of hardship in my family. And so we came out kind of broken people, doing the best that we could. And it followed us into our marriage. And the one thing I wanted more than anything in the world was to escape the turmoil in my life. And I thought, okay, I'm 18, I'm starting my life, and I'm in complete power now. And you learn
right.
very quickly when you're in a marriage, that's not really how it goes.
No,
there's two people
right.
in it, not one.
Right.
So
that's right.
there was a good amount of hardship in our marriage for the first 10 years was the hardest of my life. And it took me to my breaking point. It really did. And it's funny because I didn't see us making it through this. I knew that Luke was the only compatible soul for me, just this connection that we have. But it was so hard, and we were both so broken, and we didn't know how to do this differently. And through a series of, you know, my life coaching and him being willing to change, we were part of our own healing. And it's truly a miracle to me where we're at today.
And I think that is an inspiring story, which all by itself, we could spend an hour talking about. So many people give up so easily on marriages. I tell everybody, there were many times in my marriage I would have paid you to take my husband, quite a bit, in fact. And now,
totally.
The first 30 years are the hardest, and after that it becomes really pretty good, and after 40 years it's extraordinary, so it's worth sticking it out. I just wanted to make that little commercial for trying to make the best of marriage and not just throwing away a marriage that doesn't quite fit. But let's move on.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like a lot of people will say, like, I just don't love them anymore. I just don't love them. And it's, love's an action verb. It takes work. Like, relationships, they start off beautiful and they're easy. But to actually make a marriage work, it takes work, and it takes selflessness, and it takes really, really putting your heart into it and trying and hurting and being there for each other. And it's not easy.
If a marriage is abusive, you've got to get out of it. If a marriage is just tough, that's a good thing. And anyway, enough about that little commercial for marriage. But there came a point, and it was right about the same time my primary guide was trying to get me to connect with Suzanne. Your primary guide tried to get you to go find Suzanne, right? Well, that was about two years ago. It was the fall of 2015, which I thought was kind of, 2014 rather, which I thought was kind of neat. So tell us, you then found Suzanne. You were told to find a medium, and then you found Suzanne, right?
Well, that's a funny story. I had forgotten how to listen to spirit because I had blocked it out for so long. And like I said, I had kept this avenue open with my brother, but in every other way, I didn't want anything to do with this. And I was tired of feeling people's pain, because as an empath, that's really the first thing that you learn to pick up on is other people's pain. And I was tired of feeling that. And I was tired of the hardships and not feeling safe really in my spirituality. And so I had really strongly closed it out. And I had a sequence of events that spirit found me. And so it started changing my life, and I learned to start listening. And then in November of 2014, spirit actually came to me and said, you need to go see a medium. And it was the most asinine, crazy thing I had ever heard in my life. I was not open for that at all.
It's wonderful to hear young people who are discovering spirit and reveling in it and just starting their careers. I have to say, I'm having a terrific time. But we're about to find out how it all happened for Camber. So you had the same kind of experience that I had with Suzanne. You were told you got to find a medium, right? And then out of the blue, someone mentioned her. Tell us that story.
Yeah, like I said, in November of 2014, I got my first being told to go find a medium, and I was like, that is nuts. No, I am not doing that. Even having this gift, you know, I was aware that, you know, there was people out there that might have a gift, and there was people out there that might just want my money.
Right.
And so I was not open to this at all. And that voice for 3 months kept coming to me, and at least 3 times a week, almost every single day, saying, you need to go see a medium. You need to go see a medium. And finally, in January of 2015, I stopped. It was so strong. I stopped dead in my house, and I said out loud, very facetiously, because I had no idea who I was talking to, and I said, okay, mystery voice, if you want me to go see this medium, you deliver this person into my lap, and I will go. Otherwise, leave me alone. Like, I'm done with this thought. This is crazy.
Right.
And it was within a week, there was a girl that I knew that is acquaintance, not somebody that I had super deep conversations with or even hung out with, but I ran into her, and she told me about Suzanne and about her reading within a week. And then she,
that's
like, is crying and telling me about her reading and all these validations, and she stopped and looked at me and like kind of like almost in shock that she had shared all this. And she goes, oh my gosh, I have told 2 family members about this. I have no reason why I just dumped all this on you. And I was like, okay, fine. Yeah. I need her name and number because I'm supposed to. And so I shared my experience, what I was going through, and it's just developed from there.
So you had some readings with her. When and how did you find Elizabeth?
Oh, I had my first reading, and my family came through, and my brother came through. And one of the things that I wanted to know most of all was, is this just in my head? Am I, like, crazy? Or is this something that's really something I'm not making up? Because when you're intuitive, there's a lot of it that goes on in your head, and I've always seen colors and things that have gone around me. But I was very aware that this was something that I was experiencing on my own, so I wanted to know the validness of it. So yep. The first reading I had, my family came through, and my guides were present, but she didn't step forward right away. And it was my second intuition development appointment that I had asked her. So Suzanne gives you like these meditations to go through before you actually do the appointment and find that person. And so I had done those meditations, and I had gotten a pretty good idea of who my master guide was. And I was in my bathroom, and I asked, I was like, do you have a name? And I got Elizabeth right away. And it's funny because it's been one of my favorite names my whole life. And I walked in to Suzanne's office, and we went through, and we did the meditation, and you look down into a pool of water, and you have your master guide come and stand next to you. And me and Suzanne have the exact same hair color, the same color frequency she vibrates, height, hair color, personality. And I told her the name that I got, and she goes, that's so crazy, because in red cursive above your head is the name Elizabeth.
Wow. Wow. What's interesting, of course, is that her Elizabeth's eternal name is probably not Elizabeth. What our guides do is to give us a name that for them that they think we will like to call them. So when you say Elizabeth was one of your favorite names, that would be one reason she'd choose that name. My own primary guide uses Thomas because he was Thomas Jefferson in one of his lifetimes, and he knew I would always think of him as Thomas Jefferson, knowing that. So although I've moved beyond that now, he still won't tell me his eternal name. He says, you'll know when after you're here, you'll know who I am and who you are. And that has to be good enough for us, right? So what did Elizabeth say to you then? Oh, first I have to ask you, because people are wondering, you started out at trying to find out from your family members and others that you were connecting with, is this real or am I insane? And what made you know it was real? What made you know that?
Well, it's funny because there's thoughts that we have that are tangible thoughts that one leads to another. And you can tell they're from your mind because they're fluent. But all my life I've had these thoughts that just randomly, they're just clear, very clear and sudden thoughts that aren't mine. And I always understood that. I just understood that that wasn't me. But as you grow older, you get more skeptical, and that childlike wonder and just trust goes away. And you're like, okay, is this me? Is my imagination? Am I crazy? Like, what is going on up there? And
yes.
So it was when I got older that I stopped trusting so much. And as I was phasing out this connection, it got weaker and weaker and weaker. And so I had to open up all those. I had to clear all the walls that I had built so that I could have that connection back. And trust is a huge part of doing what I do and being intuitive, because they do. Your spiritual team uses the right side of your brain because that's the part that they can create and pull memories from, and they use your imagination. So there's a line there that a lot of people, it's like, well, I think this is my imagination. It's like, yes, it is. And the more you trust it, the stronger it gets.
Yes. Yeah, that is such a fascinating point. There is really no difference. I mean, I've been in the course of my research, I've done all kinds of things. And for example, I rescued a being who had been apparently dead for 200 years under the guidance of Bruce Moen, who I strongly recommend to everybody who does this work. And I said, well, I feel that this or that is happening. I'm not really sure. And he said, well, imagine it. Imagine that it's happening. And so I put details into it, and it became more real. Now, whether those were actually details that I was opening up to, I don't know. But it doesn't matter. Very soon I came upon a woman sitting in a spinning wheel in a garden. And I know I'm imagining this. He said, just keep going. And we rescued her. It was beautiful. But there's just no difference really between your imagination and what's real in what's eternal. And I think that's partly because our minds are so powerful. Our minds are much more powerful.
Because when I open up to spirit and I start listening, I literally have to keep the left analytical side of my brain out of it. Because the more that's there, the weaker the connection gets. And it's to the point now I've done enough readings and I've had enough people validate that there was nobody else that knew about this. But that's what it is. There's such a strength behind that.
Yes. I think mediums love validations even more than the people that they're reading for, because once again, it gives them that little confirmation. And now we're talking about Elizabeth, who is her primary spirit guide. We all have primary guides. Their job is to help us hit the marks on our life plan. And if we have a specific role which is related to this work, as I do and as Camber does and as Suzanne does, one of the things Suzanne says is that her guides love your guides. That's, I think, one reason why she works with you so well. But if we have a guide, you met her through Suzanne Wilson's discernment program, right? And then did she come into your life then after that in a very direct way?
Yeah, well, I always accredited the feelings and things that I got from her. I would always call it the Holy Ghost because that was the part of the religion that I was raised with, and that's what I thought it was, and I didn't know how else to really discern it. But then now that I've identified her, and it's funny because we work so closely together on a daily basis. It's funny to say that one of my best friends is Spirit. But
yes,
she's been with me my whole life, and I have this very strong feeling that we've spent past lives together. And so I do. We work so closely on a daily, hourly basis. She's always with me. So
you feel her with you all the time, right?
Yes, I do.
And do you feel her inside you or right next to you, or where is she?
She'll bring up memories, thoughts, feelings, inspirations, things like that inside of me. But most of the time she hangs out towards the right and like a step behind me, like kind of by my shoulder blade, like to my right side.
Exactly right. Yes. Thomas is always, if I think of him, I mean, I he doesn't break into my life, but if I think of him, I am immediately aware he is at my left, right behind my shoulder. Exactly right. Isn't that amazing? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's so comforting to have her there. And I committed to her after this journey and after this calling actually came to me. And I told her, I said, okay, I'm going to trust in you now. And any doors you open for me, I'm going to walk through them. So this will be a wild ride. And ever since then, I mean, she's never let me down. She's always has my best interest. And even when she pushes me a little bit, you know, and I emotionally don't want to, it's always for my best interest, and she's always there.
Mine is a little bit tougher. He has his own agenda, and I promised before I was born that I would carry it out. So he's pretty happy now, but I didn't want to do some things that he said I had to do, and I did them, and I'm the better for it. So I'm glad he pushed me. But this is the kind of relationship it's possible to have with your guide. If you make a commitment to serve. I mean, if you just don't care and you hope he'll make you rich, you won't ever have that kind of help. But if all that you want to do is serve Spirit, your guide will be right there with you all the time and will be taking care of you. It's a wonderful feeling. I've always known I was not alone, but as you apparently have, because sometimes the non-material people with you were not the best. But it's glorious to know that you're not alone, and the one with you is protecting and taking care of you and helping you live your best possible life. I love that feeling.
Yeah. She's definitely my soul sister in so many ways. So it's great.
Have you asked her if you've had other lifetimes together?
Well, like I said, in the beginning, it was very much something that I had to remove a lot of blocks that I had placed up to try to survive doing this and not feel everybody suffering. And so in the beginning, I told Suzanne, I go, this is so weird, but I swear that we shared a past life together. And one of us, either I was older or she was older, but we were sisters. And Suzanne validated that for me. She's like, yeah, it was your last lifetime. And she was the older one. And she committed to, she's done serving in Earth life. She's had all the knowledge and experience that she has. And so she committed to guide me on this lifetime and to find this calling that I've committed to help grieving people find closure throughout my life. So
has she validated that this is what you've committed to do, that this is the role and you're helping you step into it?
Yeah, it's definitely, like I said, it's a beautiful gift with great rewards, but also very heavy burdens. And so I had to know where this was going. And so I talk out loud to her, and we had a conversation, and I needed to know, like, you know, what part this calling was going to take place in my life, because there's so much controversy about it, and there's a lot of people in my own immediate family that don't understand. And so she told me, she's like, this is part of your life's plan. You've been avoiding it for a very, very long time. But throughout the rest of your life, you are to help people find healing. And this is, as a healer, this is what I committed to do. And that's why I brought this gift into life with me.
Many people listening also made commitments. And if, especially if you're younger, although I wasn't clear about mine till I was retirement age, but it's important to try to get in touch with that deeper aspect of yourself, where your spirit guides are, so that you can know too what you're supposed to do. Because once your life is set on the path that you chose before you were born, you will be happy like you cannot imagine. Isn't that right? Don't you feel wonderful about your whole life now?
Oh, I do. I feel so on purpose, and this has really served me in so many ways. I have a daughter that is also very, very gifted, and if I didn't have this ability and I wasn't open to it and I didn't understand it, I would probably interact with her so much differently. So it's just so many small areas in my life that this has touched and helped, and I'm so grateful for it in so many ways.
Tell us about your daughter. How old is she now?
She's 10.
And when did you first realize she was an empath? Was she small?
I knew that she was an empath from the time that she was little. I didn't know how gifted she was. I don't see spirit hardly ever. I think I can count on one hand how many times I've actually seen a person with my physical eyes. I see them in my mind's eye. I'll see colors and orbs and things like that, but very rarely will spirit come to my physical eyes. They always come to my mind's eye. I think it's easier for them. I've always sensed more than I've seen, and so that's my strength as an intuitive. But my daughter, she has a very specific gift where she can see with her physical eyes, and I didn't know about it. She didn't share it with me until about 8.5 years old. Then that kind of opened up, but she's very, very gifted.
What's her name? Or maybe you don't want to give her name. Let's not talk about her name. Let's instead talk about how she reacts to feeling this way. Does it frighten her? Does she see anything negative? Is she happy? How does she feel about it at the age of 10?
At first, it was obvious that she was an empath and that she could feed off of people's energy and also feel their energy on a different level. And it was something I was familiar with being a little person at one point and being in the same situation. But I didn't realize how deep her gift really went. And she never, ever talks about it at all. She always had this fear of going to sleep, and I should have recognized it because it was very similar to the fear that I had, except we don't have the same energy in our home. And so at first it was just this fear of not wanting to go sleep, not wanting to be alone in her room. She, for the first 7 years of her life, she'd always sneak in with her brothers and sleep in the same room because they share a room. And so all three of them would kind of huddle in this one bed and sleep together. And it was when we started, you know, fourth grade, that we started being like, okay, like, you're old enough, you need to sleep in your own room. And she would start to panic. And Suzanne actually helped me in one of my readings. She goes, one of your daughters sees, she's like, your ancestry is coming to your house on a regular basis, which I knew, I could feel them. And she goes, one of your children, not your daughter, she said, one of your children actually sees with her physical eyes all these ancestors that come to you. And so I went home and I asked my son, my oldest son, because he's autistic. And so I was like, maybe it's him. He just doesn't know how to tell me. And I asked him, and I'm like, do you ever see anything that you don't quite tell me about? And, you know, didn't have any clue what I was saying. So I went to meet my youngest son, and he had no clue what I was talking about. And it was obvious in her eyes the second I go, do you ever see anything that you don't talk to me about? And she just went, like, blank face. She has these big, beautiful doe-like eyes. And they just got so big. And she just looked at me and she goes, what do you mean, mommy? I go, come on, Katie. I'm like, tell me, like, what's going on? And she started talking to me about, you know, she sees with her physical eyes, and my brother comes to her, and he's come to her and saying happy birthday to her before. And she gets a lot of movement in her room. She used to get a lot of movement in her room. And since then, we've learned to make it a safe zone and a no-fly zone at night so that she can fall asleep without a bunch of people coming in and out and interrupting her sleep, because that's how it was. She'd wake up in the middle of the night and come into me and want to sleep in our room, and I never understood why. But she's gotten a lot more comfortable. She understands it a lot more, and we have a really open communication about it.
What would you give as in terms of advice to parents who have a child that may be intuitive?
For me, there's this trust that needs to happen on both sides. My daughter needs to be able to trust me and know that I'm not going to be like, are you making this up?
Right.
You know, part of it might be imagination, but a lot of it at that age, the doorways are so clear and they're trying so hard to express what this is like. And it's really hard for a little mind to understand. And so having that trust in them, I've told her, I said, I believe you 100%, but you also need to know that I need you to always, always be honest with me. And
Perfect.
If there's a problem, come to me. But don't over-exaggerate it. I believe you for face value. You don't need to add any flair or anything to it. And so we set up some boundaries under which we can talk about it. And she knows that she can trust me and I can trust her. And I never, ever, ever discredit anything she's saying. And I feel like that's huge.
I think that's important whenever you have children, that you trust them and that you get them to trust you. So that's beautiful. That's beautifully said. And there is help and support for young psychics. There are mediums who specialize in helping them to develop their gifts. If your child has the gift, your child is supposed to have the gift. Don't try to stand in the way of it, as happened with Camber, but instead help them to develop it to their own glory and to the glory of spirit. But some people are saying, I wonder if I could have a meeting with Camber to talk about their own gifts or to talk about maybe to get a reading. Do you do public readings?
I do. Right now I'm doing more one-on-one readings. I'm starting to open the group meeting. I have a scheduled group meeting that I'm doing with some close friends. And so it's a little bit different tapping into groups, but right now I'm doing small groups, you know, two people to one-on-one readings. And then I also do intuitive life coaching.
So if they wanted to reach you, how would they do that? Do you have a website?
I do. It's called pathtopurpose.life. And it has my contact information on there. It has a little bit about what I do with my intuitive life coaching. And I'm in the process of getting my actual story in detail and how this all developed and how it presented itself to me in life. I'm going to be making my mediumship adventure story its own page. So that'll be coming up there really, really soon.
So path, pathtopurpose.life.
Yeah, L-I-F-E, life.
Okay, all right. Well, then if anyone is interested, and if for some reason you're driving, you didn't write it down, just contact me through robertagrimes.com, and I'll give you her website address. Is there anything you want people to know about your path or where you're going next or anything at all that you'd like people to know?
As for my path, this is just going to keep getting bigger. My sole purpose after finding my own healing is I really want to help heal other people. I had been looking for 30 years trying to put myself back together, and I had been to several therapists and different means to find it, and it wasn't until spirit came through to me and showed me, you know, my life coaching and finding truly who I am as a medium before I was able to find that healing. And so when I'm able to give that back to people and I'm able to bring confirmations through that this isn't the end and I'm able to help people make changes and growth and strength in their life, it's truly, truly, it fills me in a way that I cannot express. And it's something that I'm dedicating the rest of my life to. So,
wow. That is exactly the way it feels when you do find your life's purpose, what you were born to do. You feel centered, you feel strong, you feel positive, and you're joyous, exactly the way you feel. And I didn't find it till late in life. It is never too late, everyone, to begin to try to understand truly why you're here. Until you know that, until you know why you're here, there's something big missing at the center of your life, and you may not even be aware of that. So I urge everyone to take inspiration from this beautiful story of a young medium. And we're going to have Camber back in a bit so we can watch her grow. But meanwhile, thank you so much, Camber, for being here. And I'm just delighted to meet you. My dear friend, you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when I can really help make sure you understand that, your whole life will open up in ways you cannot even imagine now. Next week, our guest will be Australian researcher and author David Burfoot. Like me, David has become fascinated with the way all the evidence from myriad different sources all fits together perfectly. How is that possible? He uses the old tale of the four blindfolded men and the elephant to help you see how all the different scientific and spiritual disciplines are finding aspects of the same great truth. His wonderful book is called Finding the Elephant, and it's one of the very few books I've ever read that I wish I had written. He got there first. David Burfoot is a future star. Please join us next week. And this week, our guest has been Camber Wilson. She is a beautiful young woman who is developing under the care and tutelage of Suzanne Wilson. Camber has the potential, Suzanne believes, to be one of the greatest evidential mediums of her generation. Her gift is incomparable, and it is such a gift to be able to share with others this possibility of connecting with people we used to think were dead and knowing for certain at the core of your being that life really is eternal. If you feel that you might have a gift, you owe it to yourself and to the world to try to develop that gift. There are many ways you can do it. If you feel that you kind of are blocked, send me a contact through robertagrimes.com and I'll try to help. I'm not able to develop you, but there are good people who can show you the way. The world as it is now, more than ever before, has a desperate need for young people like Camber Wilson who are able to share these gifts with the world and make all the difference. So if you think you may be one of them, don't turn away from it. Embrace it. Meanwhile, as you may know, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever. Soon they'll all be available as audiobooks, and I love hearing from people who are reading. The Fun of Dying is the only one out at the moment of this broadcast, but soon there will be three others out. I love hearing that people are loving my audiobooks. It makes all my time sitting in the little studio worthwhile. I write fiction, too, and I've gone back to doing that. I've been doing it off and on all my life. I'm writing a 7-novel saga to share these truths with people who would rather explore in stories than just hear or read things that are factual. Chieftain's Maiden and Jack in Love are the first two out, and they begin a 4-centuries-long tale that uses what we're learning from the dead to explore whether we as a species might at last be able to advance the development of humankind and create forever an eternally peaceful, loving, joyous world. Is there an alternative for humankind that's even possible? That's what this saga explores. But they're also pretty good yarns all by themselves. You could read any of the books independently. If you'd like to read fiction, please check them out and let me know what you think. You can find recent episodes of Seek Reality on bbmglobalnetwork.com. Earlier episodes are being rebroadcast on Green Vision 7 Radio and on the X-Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates worldwide at xzbn.net. Seek Reality is available as free podcasts on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. And of course, for more information about where I'm broadcasting now, anything more about Seek Reality, to read my blog, or if you'd just like to contact me, questions, maybe say hello, go to robertagrimes.com. I answer every email. It's my joy to do that. As you know, this is something which is my bliss. I just love doing it. I'm grateful to you that you spend your time with me this way. I still have to pinch myself knowing that there are people, and I hear from them a lot, who are glad that I'm doing this, and you really keep me going when you tell me that. So thank you so much for being there. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.